This podcast is brought to you by Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine for those that love to make and drink great beer. To learn more or to subscribe, visit beerandbrewing.com or find us on social media at Craft Beer Brew. It's episode 321 of the Craft Beer and Brewing podcast, and for this one, we're back in Yakima. It's harvest time. I can't stay away. I just have to find reasons to keep coming back year after year for hop harvest. Sitting with me for this episode is Chris Baum of Varietal Beer, based in Sunnyside, Washington. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Jamie.
Excited. Yeah, last year we were Joe and I were up here doing some stuff. We stopped by your tap room in Sunnyside, drank a few beers, and I know out of that Twine Climber, your kind of core IPA, made it onto my personal critics list. I was so blown away by the awesome work you're doing, and you got onto my list of people like, hey, I gotta talk to Chris about how he's brewing these beers, and so now I'm back this year with a justification, part of the justification for coming back to Yakima. Yeah.
Well, thanks for paying attention to that beer. It means a lot. We love making it. We make more of that than anything. And so for someone to notice it, it means a lot to us.
Beautiful beer. What we're going to talk about in this episode, we're going to talk about fresh hop brewing because you have a little bit of a different approach to it. Also right here in Yakima Valley where, you know, giant amount of the world's hops are grown. You're really close to it, really close to farms. Spend a lot of time working directly with farmers grabbing hops, and you've have a viewpoint on hops that is incredibly developed and nuanced because of this kind of proximity and the number of different farms, the number of different growers you've worked with and friends with and pull hops from. So we're going to tap into all of that. We're definitely going to talk about your approach to fresh hop brewing, but we're just going to also talk about brewing IPA in general and using hops, trying to pull into all of that knowledge that you have. Before we do that, for years, G&D Chillers has chilled the beers you love, partnering with 3,000-plus breweries across the country. They're proud of the cool partnerships they've built over the past 30 years. They know brewing doesn't stop at 5 o'clock, nor do they. G&D uses quality components, expert craftsmanship, and constant innovation. With 24/7 service and support, your brewery will never stop. Remote monitor your chiller for simple and fast access to all the information you need, providing you with the peace of mind your operation is running smoothly. Reach out for a quote today at gdchillers.com or call to discuss your next project. Also, this episode is sponsored by BSG and their partners HVG, who bring you the very best in German hops, including Amira, the latest from their hop breeding program with its classic hoppy, slightly herbal, and zesty lemon aromas. It's the ideal hop for those looking to capture the traditional flavor of a classic German lager. Visit bsgcraftbrewing.com to learn more. And if you hear Old Orchard mentioned in the brewing community, don't be surprised. The flavored craft juice concentrate blends from Old Orchard have shipped to over 46 states. Their new brewing customers often mention discovering Old Orchard through word-of-mouth recommendation of another brewer. To join the core of Old Orchard's brewing community, learn more at oldorchard.com/brewer. So, Chris, let's start off with a little bit of background history. Talk to me about yours.
So I've been brewing for 11-ish years, something like that. Got my start washing kegs for a friend who's now one of my business partners, Chad. I just was homebrewing and wanted to get into the commercial side, and he was the only guy who was willing to kind of let me come in and do something. So
you're from the area?
I did not grow up here, but I moved here in 2008 and just started diving into homebrewing. I was working as a wildlife biologist, so spent a ton of time on the road, bouncing through the West, drinking tons of beer, listening to podcasts and reading books and visiting breweries where I could. Coming home, and I'd have 3 weeks at home, you know, in between 2 months on the road, so I'd just brew like crazy, and those beers would ferment out, and I'd come home and package them up. And eventually I was just like, I'm really into the brewing. I can't drink all the beer that I'm brewing. So I would like to, you know, get into a situation where everyone can drink my beer. So yeah, Chad kind of was like, yeah, come wash kegs and hang out with me while I brew some beer. And one thing led to another through a couple of years, and he decided he wanted to move on to work more in the hop industry, and I was ready to get off the road. So I took over that job at a little brew pub that had been around since 97, just around the corner from where our brewery is now, and took over as head brewer there. And that's how I kind of got my start. While I was there brewing, I sort of changed the whole program as far as our hoppy beers and really started focusing on water. The water that we had been using was just city water, and it was terrible. So I utilized the RO system that was there and began building our water from scratch. And immediately, like, we saw huge improvements, in the beers that we're brewing. This guy came in the brewery one day, and he's introduced himself. He said he was Jay. He was the executive director of the Port of Sunnyside, which is a nonprofit governmental entity to facilitate economic development in their district, which is Sunnyside. And he said, "Hey, we're thinking about, we have this building. We'd really like to have a brewery come into it. Would you be interested in opening your own spot if we like paid for the build out?" And I was like 6 months into my like first, you know, job. And I said, "Well, I'm not quite ready for that yet." But we had John, my business partner, and Chad and I had been thinking about, you know, at some point it would be really cool to own our own thing. And so I just sort of like shelved that, went through, you know, just kept brewing and kept having fun and meeting people. Eventually we did this program here in Yakima. It's called the Enterprise Challenge, sort of business plan competition. And we put together a business plan for it was supposed to be like all wild, you know, spontaneous fermentation brewery. And
dodge the bullet on that one.
Yeah. We sort of started looking at like all these places we could do it. Sure, and, sure. And then some people finally talked some sense into us, and they're like, "Look, you brew great hoppy beers, and you have all these hops, and your friends with all these hop farmers and brokers, and so you should really focus on that." And we're like, "Okay, yeah, maybe we'll focus on that." And then in that business plan competition, Jay came back. He's like, "Hey, we got actually a different building, and we will like build your brewery for you. Do you want it?" And we're like, "Well, yeah." The only hiccup was that we all live about an hour away from Sunnyside. So that was sort of, but you know, they're going to build a $1 million facility for us. So we said yes to that. And so, I quit the job at the brewery just around the corner from where we currently are because it would sort of be a conflict of interest. Got a job with Bailbreaker. There's a shift brewer there going through, their first kind of big expansion, and had an opportunity for someone to come in who could work different parts of their production. And, so I kind of fit in there, and they were cool with me like working on my project. And, I was supposed to be there 6 months, and I ended up being there 2 years because, you know, a lot of people know that when you're thinking about building a brewery, it costs twice as much and takes twice as long.
And at least it was the Port of Sunnyside that was, handling some of that.
Yeah. I mean, and so at that point there was a lot of, breweries being built out. So this is 2016. And,
I think that was right about, 'cause 2016 was the harvest. The first time I came up to Yakima Harvest, and I recall meeting you at Bailbreaker while I was there, and, getting one of those version 1 varietal hats for the, before the brand, while you were just brewing the beer there and kegging it without a tap room. But yeah, man. Back in the day.
That was the back in the day. And our equipment ended up being, you know, some months late. We were the next brew house after Steve Luke's brew house. And so his was really late, and ours was also late, but not quite as late. But that meant we had to open the tap room with no equipment. So we did a lot of collabs and got a bunch of beer in that we could sell through our tap room, which in retrospect was actually a pretty good idea. It gave us a lot of ideas about what the local community wanted as far as the beers. So when we were able to finally get our equipment in and get it commissioned and get our beers going, it was, you know, just playing the hits from day one. So I feel like our community like really defines like what we brew. We have like sort of like gotten them to enjoy things that we didn't think they would, but just because we enjoy brewing those things. But
so what's the core of it? What's the brewing program look like now at Varietal, now that it is certainly hop focused? And, you know, as we were there drinking some beers yesterday, like a lot of hoppy beers on that board. Now, of course, at this time of year, it's expected, right?
Yeah. We, we're very focused on hops. A lot of our customers work in the hop industry, so they're pretty excited to see their hard work being showcased, both farmers and people working, at the, YCH and BSG and all the places that are processing the hops. So we're excited to show those, but we also, we brew lagers.
A little bit of self-interest there and calling out the farms and, and the brands of hops and whatnot. So when you're doing specific things, you people get a little bit of that showcase.
Yep, exactly. So when those employees are in there,
it's just like a brewery, like doing a tap takeover at a beer bar and bringing their entire staff, there's a self-interest.
This is celebrating you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, we do brew lagers. We have customers who will, like longtime customers, like dedicated customers who will walk out if we don't have a dark beer on. So
really?
we brew stouts. We have a spirit barrel age program, but the core of everything that we do is hoppy beers. And sort of my approach to it is showcasing those in ways that are not confrontational. So we brew a lot of very balanced beers. When I think about brewing hoppy beers, I'm starting with which direction do I want? Is it a hazy? Is it a West Coast? Will it be clear? Will it be juicy? Those sorts of things. So those are yeast choices. And that's often based on, my yeast harvest schedule and sort of the breakdown of what we need as far as our offerings. But after that, I go with malt. That's where I start with all my hoppy beers. We use exclusively a...
So there's two schools of yeast, then some...
So for ales, yes. So we have our hazy and we have our 1056 Chico.
Yeah.
And those are sort of like, those are the two paths we go down. I don't like to spend money on yeast if I don't have to. We get a lot of yeast from Balebreaker. And we do use another yeast supplier, but yeah, that's just like how I think about it when I start. And cool. Then, I think about, okay, so this, these are the malts that I have. We use a local maltster and all of our malt comes from Washington and just inside Idaho, but it's all 100% craft malt.
Really?
All of our beers. Yep.
What's the drive behind that?
So it's sort of, the core.
This is the monster of the shirt that you're wearing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that yesterday. Most of my clothing bears somebody's brand on it because, I don't pay for clothes either, apparently. But
it's Link Malt.
Link Malt. Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Brian Estes. Great dude.
He listens to the podcast, so I'm sure he'll hear this.
Yeah, yeah. He's a good friend and he's an amazing guy. But yeah, we are sort of the core tenet. One of the core tenets of our brewery is working with farmers. We love to hang out with farmers. I love knowing who grew my food, who grew my malt, who grew my hops. Those are all super important to us. And so, when Brian came around, in like 2019, he's just like, I got this little malt program. We're out of Spokane. Here's the farmers that are growing it. It's salmon safe, all these, just checking all these boxes. We're just like, this is amazing. I'm not a big fan of catalog malt, commodity malt grown from wherever and comes through. I can like call the guy who grew my malt and be like, dude, what is up with this malt? Like, it's amazing. Why? Like, I have to pull bags out. They don't like to hear that when he's like, your malt is too efficient or too flavorful, but yeah, anyways, all of our malt, craft malt, we use. The cool thing about Link is that they actually grow or they malt base malts based on varieties. So you can get pale malt from like four different barley varieties, which is pretty cool. You don't get the choice of that with some other suppliers.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
How do you then make choices amongst barley varieties for something like two row pale that's going to go into an IPA?
Right.
And is there a difference then in barley variety that you, you know, pull into for something like a West Coast IPA versus a hazy IPA? What is that difference? And then why? Why would you, you know, what are some of the either performance or flavor elements that you're looking for in some of those?
So we do what's they're called hot steeps. It's basically, you know, steeping the grains at particular temperatures for particular amount of times, draining that off and just tasting through the sugar that's produced. And that's how I make a lot of my decisions. Also, like, how much of it is there available? So, you know, this one variety, new variety is called Buzz. There's a lot of it. There's another variety we use called Genie, and there's tons of it. Some of the other ones are smaller runs, so I can't really build with any confidence like a core beer around those. So, but those two, Genie and Buzz, they create a pale, they create a pils with both of them. Genie tends to be, have a little bit more presence, like character, like mm-hmm. it's a little bit like crackery, a little bit more bread crust. Buzz is just this really clean sort of baked bread, super efficient malt that we've really been enjoying recently. So yeah, those are just sort of like, you know, it's like, well, what direction do I want to take this beer? Twine Climber. We've actually bounced back and forth between Buzz and Genie. And recently found that we prefer the Buzz, although the beer was sort of based on Genie. So,
and Twine Climber is a West Coast IPA.
West Coast IPA.
What are the small differences that this barley variety, you know, plays in Twine Climber? I mean, we're talking about very small nuances.
Yeah,
I assume,
it's
at
nuance.
This point.
It's so I did this to the, I didn't tell anybody I was doing this. I just switched up the base malt on one batch just to see if we could, you know, get anything difference, just sort of blind from the community. And everybody was just like, whoa, this batch of Twine is like great. What happened? Did you guys switch out the hops? And she's like, no, the only thing we did was change the malt.
This is one of my favorite subjects to talk about, as other people who have listened to past episodes on hoppy beers know, we could talk forever about malt.
Yeah, I know. That, and it was funny. I was making notes. I'm like, what do I want to talk about? And I was like, well, I always, when I think about brewing with hops, I start with malt. Because it's the thing that's going to allow, it's like, you know, it's the thing that's going to allow the hops to perform however they're going to perform.
Yeah.
And so water and malt, like those are where we start. And
well, I want to keep talking about malt for a little bit. And I'm curious about, you know, how, you know, because that malt is also working directly with that yeast, and those yeast are pulling out character from that malt in addition to pulling out that hop character. And I'm curious about that, you know, yeast and malt interaction. Before we talk about that, take your brewing to the next level with AccuBrew's revolutionary fermentation monitoring system, now predicting specific gravity. With AccuBrew, you'll have precise control over the fermentation process and ensure consistent high-quality results. Their cloud-based app and compact sensor work together to monitor specific gravity, fermentation activity, clarity, and temperature. AccuBrew is CIP-ready and designed to stay out of your way. Their set-it-and-forget-it solution streamlines systems and processes, confirms consistency, and helps detect problems before they ruin a batch. Join the AccuBrew community today and experience 24/7 peace of mind. Visit AccuBrew.io to learn more. Also, ProBrew is excited to announce that they are currently featuring short lead times between 2 and 4 weeks for their in-stock ProFill rotary can fillers. These can fillers run at speeds between 100 and 600 plus cans per minute while achieving precise and consistent filling volumes not achievable by most inline and mobile fillers. For more information, fill out their contact form on www.probrew.com. or email contactus@probrew.com to learn exactly how they can take your operations to the next level. ProBrew, brew your beer. Hey, and if you're a ProBrew customer, you're going to be at their Oktoberfest thing in October. I will be there too, giving a keynote speech, so come and check me out there. And elevate your brewing game with RMS Roller Grinder. Their industry-leading mills deliver optimal grind consistency, unlocking the full potential of your grain. Say goodbye to uneven grinds and hello to exceptional flavor extraction. Brew pub or production facility, RMS has the expertise in grain handling equipment to meet your needs. Visit rmsroller-grinder.com to discover how RMS can transform your brewing experience. Unleash the full potential of your grains with RMS Roller Grinder, the trusted choice of brewers worldwide. So you find this this buzz malt, you know, and this different barley variety. You know, what is it, heighten hop flavor through it? What is, does it, you know, create a smoothness to it? What, you know, what was it that you found? Was there like some,
there,
what was the thing that made it feel more interesting?
So this is a genie batch, I believe, that we're drinking. The buzz just has this like really clean sharpness that's sort of like the difference between, if I was going to sort of represent it visually, is like going from like regular old, you know, to TV to like high def, right? It's there's just like an edge to it. Just this like little crispy zing that like works super well for West Coast. You know, it's like, I think it, when I think about in terms of like West Coast versus like hazies, East Coast, whatever you want to call them, IPAs, like there's those like kind of like big, round, sweeter, fluffy kind of feel to the beer. Just not only like in mouthfeel, but also just in like the aroma and flavor profiles, where that West Coast has that edge. You know, a lot of that comes from bitterness, but
and you
a lot
want
of it,
that edge in the West Coast. Yeah, like absolutely. It should be that high it contrast, should, that yep. Ultra sharp. Yeah.
You're just like, it's on your palate. And then there's just this like zing of hops that's like enveloping like your upper palate. And you know, you go to drink it. At least that's how we build ours. We don't build a ton of bitterness into them, but because I really like to have like a, you know, have the acidity, just like both, you know, carbonic and the acidity that's being derived from hops, just like, just making it super clean. It goes on your palate, very clean. You finish it, finishes right up. You're ready to go for more. It's a different approach to hazy, and that's why people make the decision like, well, I'm feeling like one. It's like, maybe you want something a little heavier. It's going to sit on your palate for a little bit longer and be, you know, like have a bigger, richer, you know, hop character. Yeah, I just like that for West Coast, it's about that zing for us, the edge.
Sure, sure.
And the buzz really, really does that well. It has this... We've even actually pulled out the acid malt out of the beers we've been brewing with it because it doesn't need it. It's just this, the pH is like perfect to just put it in and, you know, it matches at 5.3 without any acid additions at all. And then buffers out great. So throughout the mash and the runoff.
You mentioned getting great efficiency from this. You know, if there's something, one common thread in brewers that I talk to about using craft malt, it's the kind of variable consistency and having batches that go different ways and it, you know, makes it things a little bit can make. And of course, this is just talking about craft malt in general, not talking about specific craft maltsters. You know, it is. Treating all craft maltsters as if they're the same is pretty reductive you know, maybe not the best way to think about this, but for you and your experience with craft malt, you know, have you built processes that help you kind of evaluate how some of these malts are going to work so that when you start getting into a batch and now you've got, you know, money and ingredients on the line, that you're going to get the kind of performance out of it that you're looking for?
Our experience with craft malt has, you know, 99% been with Link. Because I have a close relationship with that, those farmers and the people actually doing the malting, I'm able to sort of check in with them and get a heads up coming down the road. Hey, the C of A, you know, it came back. You're going to be getting this malt for the next, you know, 2 months because, you know, that was the size batch they made. So they can give me some heads up, you know, the efficiency is not quite as good, or, you know, the pH is a little bit higher or whatever.
Sure.
But so we've used other craft.
They're proactive in pointing that out.
They are. Yeah. We spend a lot of time on the phone, with Brian, or I do. And, you know, just sort of talking through like, well, why is that? Like, why isn't the efficiency as good this time? It still costs as much, you know, but you know, I can't do that with like catalog malt. I can't like call up like, I don't know, whoever, you know, and be like, why is this malt, you know, like not performing? Did I get the bottom of a silo? Was it like whatever, where'd that malt come from? What year of barley was it? You know, I don't know any of those things. You could probably trace it, but that sounds just like a lot of work and I'd rather just make one phone call. Sure. But yeah, so for Buzz, that's just, I don't know, it works out super well. We've sort of like integrated it more and more into our West Coast program, messing around with, so we have Twine Climber, that's our core. I've made another West Coast this year thinking about, I'm sort of changing directions on you right now, but it's that's to okay. talk about malt. I wanted to have another West Coast, but like this, like Twine Climber is like Simcoe, Citra, Mosaic, the classics, you know? And I was like, well, I want something. I like that. I like that piney, crispy, citrusy, you know, with a mosaic kind of rounding things out. Oh, and we use Chinook for bittering on this actually, which was a change from Warrior, but I don't know. Chinook has a nice pininess to it. Mm-hmm. But, so I made another beer called High Rider. And wanted something to sort of be in the West Coast family, but be completely different from that. And so I built water profile similar, pretty balanced. We do a little bit heavier sulfates than chlorides, but I wanted it to be clear. But I really wanted like a big, like fruity tropical zing, but with that like that West Coast edge. So
just enough tank to give it some structure.
But like big, like tropical notes on top of it, you know? So yeah, sulfur obviously playing a large component of that. Made the choice to use, so I was thinking I want to use Buzz in this because at that time when we were making that beer for the first time, Buzz was sort of just new to the market. And I'm like really interested in that malt. Let's do a different beer that's not Twine Climber that no one will be comparing to Twine Climber. And so we use Buzz on that and it's just pretty much Buzz. I think maybe we use a little Carafoam and that's it. No other color malts. And that Buzz malt Love a Bond's like 1.8 to 2. So it's nice and pale. And then we used some Warrior for bittering on that. And then 586 and Eldorado throughout, you know, hot side and then in the dry hop. And that beer is probably my favorite beer of the last year. It's
yeah.
And I don't have any here. Sorry.
That's all right.
We haven't sort of like integrated it fully. Like we've been thinking about making it a core year round beer, but those are major decisions, you know, to commit to. But yeah, like choose two beers, drink completely differently, but no one would confuse High Rider for, you know, an East Coast. Or, you know, it's like, it's definitely in the West Coast thing, but it doesn't have, you know, brewers are finally coming back to West Coast. I drink a ton of them and I'm really enjoying it, but they're all like going that like pine citrus dank route, which I enjoy, but I also love big tropical flavors. And that's, you know, I like that about hazies. I just don't like how like filling and sweet they were. So we always try to dry our beers out anyway, but so this is just sort of a way to.
Well, I want to come back and dig deeper into hops and, you know, you building hop combinations and of course selecting out, you know, the characters in some of these hops after deciding on what the broader families are going to be. Cause I think there's a lot there to dig into. But I'm curious, like now we just stay in this kind of West Coast vein talking about, you know, things like gravity and the way that, you know, that impacts the flavor and then how you balance bitterness with gravity in your West Coast IPA.
So we do it primarily with water because I do like to dry my beers out. If a beer finishes above 2.5 at West Coast, I'm like, something's wrong here. I like to be around like 1.9 to 2.2, something like that.
Ultra lean.
Dry, yeah.
Yeah.
But I, you know, that way I can put less malt up there in front, right? So if I'm starting at like 14.6, 14.8, I dry down to like 2.2, you're at like 6.8, 6.7. And that's right where our community seems to like sit down and have three beers and be cool. You know, if you have something that's like 7.2, 7.5, you know, approaching, you know, that like upper end of what would be considered a West Coast IPA before it hits a double, people will have one and then be done, you know, because they're just having one beer after work, or maybe they want to have a couple beers after work, but they also have to drive. We live in a community where everybody drives.
Yeah.
And so I'm cognizant of that. So I do want people to, you know, have a couple. So 6.7, it's like 6.5 to 6.7 is right where I want to be for West Coast. So that's my target. In order to get that balance, to get that sweetness, but to dry them out, I'm doing that with water just to maintain some malt presence, you know. So I'm just like,
so what are you doing in the water to help build that bigger body feel?
Yeah, so I focus primarily, I mean, this is not new rocket science, it's just the balancing that sulfate to chloride ratio. You know, I'm like maintaining 50 parts per million, you know, finished in my beer of calcium, and from there I just adjust, you know, how much, either if it's sulfate or chloride, just to try to like ride that line of balance. So if I want to tip it a little bit further towards crispy, you know, put a little bit more sulfate, but always keeping in mind like these beers are going to dry out. We've done it a few times. It's mostly been on collabs where, you know, collab partners like, no, I want to make this bitter, like let's make this bitter, we brew bitter beers. And so I'm like, okay, cool, let's, you know, go heavy sulfate. And just never locally, like, people are just like, it's good, but I'll have a Twine Climber, you know. And so that's just
where do you like your West Coast IPAs to finish IBU wise and solely talking about it in terms of IBU, I think is not exactly, doesn't accurately portray the way that the bitterness conveys. I mean, there's obvious qualities to bitterness that you get from how you use them, and we'll certainly get into that too. But in a broader sense, where do you like them?
So I don't normally pay attention to IBUs because I for the exact reason you just said.
Yeah.
But I would say 50-ish, somewhere like there.
Yeah, okay.
I literally don't know. Don't care.
It's reasonable. Fair enough.
Often been heard to say IBUs are bullshit. Other than like, if somebody, you know, you're talking to a customer and they want some relative scale of like, how hoppy is it? I'm like, well, I don't even know what that means. But here's a sample. And generally, you know, people aren't into, our community isn't into that lasting, lingering bitterness of those, you know, like early 2000s IPAs that, you know, in the IBU wars, whatever you want to call them. They just want it like a beer they can like sit and drink and hang out with their friends and not have to pay too much attention to, but enjoy, you know. And those are the sorts of beers that I find of ours, like, command, you know, people who do know beer are like, whoa, like this beer is actually like pretty awesome. Even though it's not like blowing up your palate, you know,
Sneaking the structure in there through hops without it conveying as this kind of rough bitterness. I mean, that's the magic stuff, right? That's the trick that you're really pulling off. And I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. But before we do, you like wildly aromatic IPAs and tropical lagers? Good thing Omega designed thiolized yeast for just that reason. Thiolized yeast are a new tool for brewers to bring intense guava and passion fruit aromas out of your malt and hops. And wait, there's more. Omega Yeast makes yeast to order with a consistent 1 week lead time, ensuring peak freshness and reliability. Also, sustainability doesn't have to cost you more. Try Robert's PolyPros multi-pack can handles designed for sustainability and cost savings. Grip pack rings are biodegradable and average 5 cents per unit. Craft pack carriers are recyclable and designed with 30% less plastic. Plus, you can save up to 25% on costs. Enjoy easy application with inline applicators and 24/7 support. It's easy to go green with these multi-pack handles. Go visit go.robertspolypro.com/cbbpod to request free samples and start saving today. And ABS Commercial has been a full-service brewery outfitter for over 10 years. They're proud to offer brewhouses, tanks, keg washers, and small parts to brewers across the country, as well as equipment for distilling, cider making, wine making, and more. They know the ins and outs of the brewing and installation process and can design the perfect setup for you, whether you're just starting out or looking to expand. Contact them today at sales@abs-commercial.com to discuss your customized brewery needs. ABS Commercial. We are brewers. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about, you know, some of the techniques that you use to, you know, to whether it's how and when you're adding hops or some of the certain varieties that you're trying to, you know, grab a little bit more of that structure. And that structure isn't just bitterness. It is also that sulfur, fraction that also comes from hops. Thinking about that as a structuring element in addition to bitterness can be pretty important these days, with how prominent that is, especially with, you know, the rise in New Zealand hops and everything else. Like, you know, you've got all these other tools now that are also at your disposal that help give some of that structure to it without it just coming across as bitter. Talk to me a little bit about how you think about that as you're designing some of these things, process and recipe.
We use a lot of CO2 extract for our bitter addition. It's pretty rare if we're going to add a bitter addition, which a lot of our beers don't have. But for our West Coast, I generally do. It's either a Chinook extract or a Warrior extract. And I've just landed on those two varieties just out of years of experience, I guess. We brewed it with a lot of Warrior extract at Bale Breaker, and I really fell in love with that bittering there. But the Chinook is just this, like, I don't know, it's just this really nice, clean, but it's got like a little bit more of a gritty edge to it.
What do you like about it in the extract format versus T90s?
It's just easy to add.
It certainly doesn't soak up liquid or anything.
It doesn't soak up liquid. I can, you know, just like put it right in the boil, right at the start of boil. And it's like a known quantity. It's like you're getting this many grams of alpha per can. And it's very consistent. I like that, especially for beers that we're brewing all the time. Beyond that, you know,
and this is just early boil edition.
I just put it either, some people at Bale Breaker, we ran it through the grant into the kettle, sort of a first wort. I don't do that. I put it into, and it's just because of how our equipment is. I just put it right in the kettle, like right before we start boiling. Mm-hmm. Sort of acts as a, you know, where you would use a firm cap or something, just as an anti-foam agent. Breaks up the surface tension a little bit. And then I usually, on our West Coast, is like 1 15-minute addition, trying to, you know, so we think about, if you're thinking about BUs, I usually figure I'm getting about 30 BUs from that extract addition. You know, 15-minute addition, I might get like 8 or 9, something like that. I acidify my wort before I add that addition. Mm-hmm. I find acidifying the wort at that point sort of calms down the effect that I think that cohumulon has on the bitterness, like how aggressive that's going to be. And I don't know, it just seems to like it just sort of pops those aroma additions. So we add those in. I add acid in before I do like any whirl flock or anything. And before that 15-minute addition of hops. And then I never add anything past that other than in our whirlpool. We tend to cool pool at 170 all of our beers, whether it's West Coast or hazy. Just trying to pack, you know, get all that big aroma without the added bitterness. I've thought, I don't know, just works. We used to brew Twine Climber, and we would cool pool at 185. And one day I was cool pooling and walked away for a few too many minutes and came back. I'm like, oh, it's at 170. Like, shut it down. Added the whirlpool hops, and that beer, everyone's like, man, what'd you do, Twine? It's so good. And I'm like, all right, okay, cool. I'm like, trial. And no, it was not. And the error worked out. So
take that, Steve Luke. There are happy accidents.
That's like pretty much it. Like, it's not, for me, complicated. That's how our program works. We have, you know, we've done for fresh hop though, we don't cool pool. Just switching gears on that. I wouldn't say we always cool pool. We don't cool pool our whirlpool additions for lagers, but all of our IPAs we do.
Yeah. How much, as you're thinking about overall hops, how much, you know, is whirlpool focused and then, versus, say, dry hop focused?
It's usually between 1.5 to 2 pounds per barrel are whirlpools. Usually two varieties, sometimes three, very rarely one. The beer that John just poured you is called Mithril Clouds, and that's our only single hop beer. It's 100% Mosaic, and it gets Mosaic. It doesn't actually get a bittering addition, so it's just all Mosaic in the Whirlpool and dry hop.
I'll ask you about that more, because when you say it's all Mosaic, I imagine that it might be a little bit more complex than that.
Nope.
No, it's okay.
It's 100% it's all Mosaic. One.
It's all the same farm and same batch of Mosaic.
No, I can't. No, we can't do that. We'd be a lot cooler if we could, though. We do use a product called American Noble, though. So after they have extracted, they've made cryo, there's this waste product, and they add a little bit of fresh Mosaic back to it. But
it's generally about this like 3 or 4 3 or 4, percent alpha acid, just super small.
So we'll dry hop with like 33. So in a 20 barrel batch, we'll put in like 33 pounds of cryo Mosaic. And they'll do like 11 pounds of the Noble just to get some of that polyphenol load back in to add to the mouthfeel.
And cheating some of that kind of natural character back. Well, it's not cheating. It's obviously
design.
It's purposeful. It's intentional.
Yeah.
Huh.
But again, that's not a West Coast beer. Although it doesn't have any adjuncts in the mash, it's 100% barley. But we're getting all the haze from the yeast.
So,
and the
it sounds crazy to me that you would use cryo but then need to balance out that kind of intensity using this American Noble, is rather than just say using T90s and getting it all in one. Why would you do it that way? Does it allow you to rebalance those characters in a slightly different way versus T90s?
In the way that cryo is concentrated lupulin, American Noble is concentrated like its polyphenol load. And that's really why we want it, is just to get some of that polyphenol and some of those terps back in. And they add to the mouthfeel, they add to the dank quality, in addition to like the giant sulfur, thiol components of Mosaic. And we kind of arrived to that like through trial and error. We were doing lots of things on that beer. It comes out 2 to 3 times a year. And, finally on American Noble, which is nice because it's pretty inexpensive.
Right.
Also. So, just 11 pounds on a 20 barrel batch is just enough to give it, because it was kind of clearing up.
And that would be like less, say, vegetative matter than if you were doing the same T90. Kind of, overall hop load with T90, you're getting more intensity out of the cryo but just tucking in just the right amount of, interesting strategy. I had ever considered doing something like that.
It's like you can kind of like re-engineer the hops, basically.
Right. I will hear brewer after brewer mention, we have to layer in some T90s so that we have some of that just using this cryo, product is its intensity. You love that, but it also has to have some dimension and depth. From some of that vegetal matter in the hops, and that's an interesting way to do
pretty much all the advanced products coming from all suppliers need T90 or something, some actual like vegetative natural hop, whole hop component added back in my opinion.
Well, let's now jump into talking more and more about hops, about building hop blends, and about the way that you think about the range of quality, flavor, aroma, and various hop varieties, how you start diving. This is I'm throwing out a whole bunch of questions, and let's go back and focus more intently on it. Let's start by talking about building hop blends for some of your core West Coast and hazy IPAs. As you start thinking about that for Twine Climber, how did you how did you land on what you wanted that hop blend to be, and how and why?
Well, that beer came out of, we needed something out the gate when we were first introducing ourselves to our community. And you cannot go wrong with that combination of hops. Like people say it's the cheat code,
And Simcoe Citra Mosaic.
Simcoe Citra Mosaic. Like you can't mess that up. If you mess that up, I don't know what to tell you. Like it's so good.
How do you balance those three though?
Yeah, I just was like, I'm going to go equal parts. Yeah. You know, we went with a little heavier Simcoe. We have a soft, very soft spot in our heart for Simcoe. It's a great, love that hop. So it's a little, feature a little heavier on the hot side. And then the Whirlpool, we actually, yeah, we've added back in, you know, that Cascade. I get that from Loza Farms. So he's a buddy and he grows that Loza. He grows that Cascade.
We went up and saw Junior at Loza on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, cool farm.
Was he picking Cascade?
I think he was in Citra.
Okay. He was in Cascade maybe the day before that. And that's the Cascade I'm going to be getting this year. So he called me up, come down and check this out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, it's pretty good.
Cascade's coming back.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's his dad had some things to say about that. I don't wait. That's a different conversation that I'm not qualified to really talk about.
Sure.
So then, and the other hop we actually add to the dry hop for the T90 component is Comet, which is, I'll go on the record and say, my favorite hop. I love Comet.
That's definitive.
Yeah. Pretty passionate about that hop. It goes into a lot of our beers. Not as like the upfront, but it's like the supporting actor, and you know, it's that hop that's like in that show. You're like, man, that guy is in everything, and he's so good. So, anyways. Comet.
So we went from like Simcoe, Citra, Mosaic to, and I also had a little bit of Cascade and a little bit of Comet now too.
So it's just like thinking about like those, like what is going to play well, you know, it gets like piney, fruity thing with Cascade and then Comet's like this big, like orange field for me. Like when I smell Comets, I'm just reminded of like walking through orange groves, this like orange blossom, honey aroma. And I just like that as sort of this like effusive, you know, underlayment that like all those other hops sort of like sit on top of and spike. So that's but again, that's trial and error. We didn't start Twine Climber that way. It's gone through a few iterations.
How do you decide, you know, in that sense, like what goes in the Whirlpool and you know what you push then in dry hop?
I really like how Cascade performs hot side.
Mm-hmm.
We use it in we have another core beer, which is all Loza Farm hops, called Supkuz, and that gets Cascade and Amarillo hot side, and then we do Citra, Comet, cold side. And it's just like, I don't know, I like Cascade hot side. It's just what I do. not always. I mean, we've dry hopped with it obviously before, but I tend to use it hot side. And yeah, so thinking about building a hop profile in a West Coast IPA, sort of picking a direction you want to go. Is it going to be a little bit more juicy, tropical? You know, so then you're going to go down like the Azaka 586, El Dorado, you know, it's going to take you down that path. And then once you kind of like decide like that's the core of this like impression that I want, you can like spike it up with little things here and there. Or are you going to go down the like, you know, piney, citrus, you know, dank route. And there's, you know, a million other routes you can go down.
What do you spike things up with? What are some of those hops used in small quantities that just kind of like, you know, add specific high points or low points that, you know, that give you that kind of broad contrast you're looking for?
Citra goes in a lot of things. It shows itself well, but it also is a good supporting actor. El Dorado is another one that's just like such a great hop in the background, elevating everything else. Don't tend to use it solo on its own. And I don't really think it's intended for that either. Cashmere is another one that we will add in sort of like just as like a spice note. If you know, so we brewed a beer recently with, our mutual friend out of Denver. And we were talking about, you know, we really kind of want to go berry. So we got some Belma and it's like, okay, what's going to support this Belma? How are we going to like really blow up that strawberry? And for me, it was Cashmere. So it was another West Coast IPA, but like, if you drink it, you're like, what is up with this? Like West Coast IPA, it tastes like drinking strawberry Jarritos. You know, it's like, it's crispy, it's dank, it's got bitterness, but then it's just, there's like this big, huge, like strawberry aroma and flavor. So that's where cashmere really played itself out. It sort of like blew up the berry, the strawberry aspect of Belma, which is an underappreciated hop, honestly.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know why. Maybe people don't want strawberries in their beer, but it's like all strawberry.
Are there some other hop blends that you find yourself, really pulling towards? And then, from there, I want to talk about, let's just leave it at that question for right now.
I really, really like Azaka. It has a big kind of tropical, juicy fruit flavor with this very slight, earthy hay thing underneath it that we really, really like. Again, that plays really well with El Dorado. Some friends came into my cold room the other day and they looked up at our hop library and they're just like, how do you even keep it straight? And I'm just like, I don't know. We get, we are around a lot of brewers and are around a lot of hop suppliers. And, they're constantly, you're constantly getting this input and, you can't take all of it in, but the highlights, we definitely try to play with as many things as we can. Since we have the opportunity, we're a small 10 barrel brew house and, you can make 10 barrels of a IPA and sell it through pretty quick and figure out, we like that. We didn't like that and move on to the next thing. So,
well, that's a good segue to talk about what I wanted to ask about next is how do you you identify varieties that you want to blend together? How do you go through, maybe not the selection process per se, because it's not like you're, rubbing and then buying a giant lot that in massive quantity. Cause again, it's a 10 barrel brew house and you can also source some things directly and do things in a small way. But how do you evaluate the quality, and the experience of these individual varieties, and then make some decisions about, which farms you want to grab stuff from, why you like theirs, talk to me about some of that process about how you think about and what kind of range you see in some of these core varieties that you go back to. What is it about some of the characters in those hops that you find resonating? Not all mosaic is the same mosaic. As you dig into some of these, how do you find the ones that really resonate with you?
That's an intense question.
It's layered because you're also friends with people.
Yeah,
people are providing you these things that they have grown. Yeah, and it's like
we do some farmer direct and we do a little bit of selection, but we're not a small brewery. I mean, we're not a large brewery. We're only going to brew 2,200 barrels of beer this year, which, thinking 5 years ago, it sounded like an insane amount of beer, but we don't, when we're sourcing a lot of the cryo and a lot of that stuff, it's just what I always recommend that brewers do is, if you can't do selection, you can still do hop selection or you can still do pellet selection. They're running all these hops, they're blending stuff off, there's group runs, and all of the hop suppliers have, tons of resources that you can use to find what those hops are going to appear like, or, in your beer. So, and they'll give you radar grams and, or whatever you call them, spider graphs and, yep. and descriptions and, there's a ton of resources out there and you can call and be like, I'm looking for a lot of hops that presents itself this way, or I need some mosaic, what's available. And they'll actually give them to you sandwiched on there. And you can see what's spiking where, and you can kind of decide, I like this. Stuff like mosaic, we can't select. Simcoe, Citra, we can't. It's just, we're not big enough. But some of the smaller stuff, Chinook, is one that we really, really enjoy brewing with. And I tend to know just from personal preference that I really like my Chinook to be less pine and more fruit. And I just know, Eric and Shelley at CLS, they where they pick theirs, they also like that. So I'm just like, cool, I'll get my Chinook from them. Yeah. Loza, I spent a lot of time with that family and smelling their hops and brewing with them. So I sort of know, again, I can't contract that their Citra and stuff, but the Cascade I have access to, and some of the public varieties, Comet is phenomenal. Their Amarillo is really nice. And those are the, again, the four hop. Well, let's see, what's it? Amarillo, Cascade, Chinook, Citra. So the Citra in that one, we try really, really try hard. You can request information about where those hops, now this information is available. You can request information about the hops lot that you're getting, and it'll tell you like what farms were incorporated in it. Sometimes it's single farm, single lot. A lot of times it's blended, especially if it's cryo or like a Lupomax or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. It's just looking at the actual individual product and does it smell and taste like the stuff I like, and then make that decision. And that's the thing, you know, you have all these relationships and everything, but like, really it's like, I just want the best hops. So that's where I falls down. Turns out I'm friends with the people who grow the best hops. I mean, that's, I don't know. I don't want to brag or anything, but.
Sure. Well, that's a good, again, a good segue to now talk about brewing with fresh hops, which is one time of year where you absolutely can roll out to your friends, as you know, these hops are on the drying floor or just being picked and, you know, on the wet side, you know, and get them directly. Yesterday, before we met up in the tap room, you guys were pelletizing, you know, and some freshly kilned hops from this harvest year for other fresh hop beers that you're doing this year. You know, but this is a way to kind of directly connect with that.
Yeah.
Let's talk to me about your fresh hop brewing process. We've talked to Zach at Single Hill. We have his process. You guys have a little different process for the way you approach it. Just as engaged with growers, just as focused on the agriculture here in Yakima Valley. You know, but maybe a little different technical process behind it.
Yeah, our wet hop beer. So we have when we were first brewing, we're like, fresh hop is a wet hop and it can't be anything else. But the BA had other things to say about that. So we're like, fine, cool. And actually that was kind of fun because it's like, oh, it kind of like, you know, opens the door to a lot of other, and I give Zach Single Hill a ton of credit for that, being like, nah, like I'm just going to get kiln hops and those are also fresh hops and I'm going to start adding those in. And that was just really kind of like, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. It gives you a ton more options.
We probably have to track it all the way back to Sierra Nevada and Celebration and taking bales of the current crop year and immediately brewing with them, which they call it a fresh hop beer and, you know, it's not a wet hop beer, but it's a fresh hop beer.
Right.
And, you know, is there a humongous difference in, you know, hops that were kilned yesterday and being brewed with today, or hops that were, you know, kilned yesterday and are being brewed within a month versus those that are then pelletized and brewed 6 months from now? Maybe there is, you know, most.
Yeah, I feel there definitely is. I mean, there's chemical changes happening no matter how good the packaging and sometimes for the better, you know, like you can get some very fresh pelleted hops and you're like, well, but in, you know, 6 months, you're like, man, these things are just like on point, a bunch of the stuff. You know, whatever those compounds are, I'm not a chemist, but like stuff's flashing off, stuff's gassing off, it's curing, you know.
You're right. There is, in, you know, Zach and I were talking about this, you know, a couple of days ago. There does seem to be some process of oxidation that isn't necessarily negative.
Right.
It is just what it is.
Yep.
It does add a, you know, sharper character to some of these flavor component and aroma components and hops, that they develop and become more distinct over time, where a lot of these fresh hop beers, even freshly kilned hops used in a dry hop, come across as just softer, just generally softer.
Yeah. The oils, like, well, also the pellet mills that we're using to do these things do not concentrate hops in the same way that the commercial pelletizers do. The densities on those things, they're more, I wouldn't say it's a T45, but it feels and looks more like a T45 than T90. So, you know, you're putting 11 pounds of that in, it's different than 11 pounds of a T90. It's just less in there, less oils and everything. Plus there's, you know, the oils are fresher and the oxidative qualities haven't changed. And in probably like, because no one's really had access to super fresh pellets, you know, our opinions of what our good beer are based on, like, well, that's the ingredients that were available. So like, we don't know what beer that has like a 2 day old pellet tastes like, because no one gets to do that except for, you know, a select few people here. So I don't know. It's
still a lot more research to be done.
A ton of research. And you get one chance per year. You know, we were talking to Tim last night. It's like, yeah, there's a ton of information, but like you only get one shot at it per year, you know? And that's like the body of work is going to be decades long in order to like sort of like get a good handle. And then, you know,
and we've only really been paying this close of attention to it for, you know, 4 or 5 years
now. And the climate
now, right?
is messing with us big time, yeah, right yeah. now. So it's like, you know, in order to get the trends, you got the amount of data they're going to collect is crazy.
Well, let's go back to your process again. Yeah. Can you talk to me about your fresh hop process?
Yeah. It's a classic conversation with me. I tend to ramble. So,
oh no, I took you off on another direction. I take the blame for that.
It's like one of our business meetings. So I like wet hops. I like wet hops in beer. I prefer them hot side to cold side, but we do a little bit of cold side wet additions. We have a program that John sort of, he's sitting here next to us without a microphone, but he sort of spearheads that. We call it the Wet Wolf program. And it's like we want a fresh hop beer like that. Those hops are on the vine, you know, 6 hours ago, and now you're drinking them. So he'll like run out to a farm, grab, you know, 10 pounds, shove them in a Sabco half barrel bright tank, rack finished beer on top of them, let them soak for like four and a half hours. And then we put that keg on immediately. And those flavors are.
Oh,
like,
so you're really just almost frickin' styling it there.
Well, we do rack them off.
Yeah.
We do get them off the hops because, you know, sometimes a beer will last a little bit longer than we want to.
But 4 hours before at a colder temperature.
That seems to be like the right contact time. If we leave them too much longer, they get super like grassy chlorophyll. And with this, you just get these like big, like you get the varietal characters a lot of times, but you also get these like really fresh kind of cucumber melon, which I know some people don't like, and I appreciate that. It's not my favorite thing either, but we just blow through these beers.
Yeah.
It's pretty
also
cool
because
thing to
you
do.
Just have a small amount.
That's true. It's too. A half barrel.
Blow through them. And so, well, but you also, you know, short circuit the other question of what's the longevity of these flavors when they're, you know, conditioned that way. But then the point is if you've got a half barrel, it doesn't matter. It's gone in no time.
Yep. Just blast right through it. That's the whole point.
It's a lot of work then to like just make a half barrel of it and rack it off. I mean, go through, I mean, just to make one keg of beer, kind of a pain in the ass.
It is. But you know, like we always say, our time is free. So,
if you're say you're brewing a larger batch, a production batch of a fresh hop beer that you may put into some sort of package. How do you approach that?
So those wet hop beers, I sort of determine what's available. We don't have a canning line, so our schedule is really laid out around our packaging schedule. And
when
the mobile canner is going to be here, and then you like pick that day and you work backwards. And then because, you know, we can't brew, you know, especially fresh hop beers, we can't brew more than one a day. We can't do one turn on the brew house. So for the 20 barrel, it's taking us 2 days to do it. So then it's just like what's being harvested that day. And so I'll come up with a pretty general hop or a malt bill.
It's flexible all the schedules become then in Yakima. I mean, even
the sales guys hate it.
We've tried to work out, you know, video podcast scheduling and whatnot. It's like, well, we don't know if we're actually going to be able to make the beer that day because, you know, this farm that we wanted to get this citra from is still, you know, pulling off Helios, you know, alpha variety. And like, we're not going to brew fresh out beer with that. Like, you know, and so, you know, sometimes, I mean, as much as you want to plan around these kinds of things, like it's nature, it's a product, you know, these are an agricultural product and like they're ready when they're ready.
And we always have during this season because of our proximity to the fresh hops, we get a lot of collab requests. So you have the added thing that you have to think about of, you know, other people's schedules. So oftentimes it's like, we're brewing the beer this day. We think, you know, if it's Citra, Simcoe, Mosaic, you're pretty safe. Like there's enough of that acreage that you can like, and you can land in those harvest windows. But anything, and but that's even not a guarantee. Like a year like this, it's been all over the place. It's just pushed all over the place. So, Yeah.
But for a production batch, you are looking then to do a two-stage, you know, fresh hop add, both wet hops on the hot side.
So we still
run through a mash tun as a grant.
Exactly. We use the mash tun as a hop back. I do 1 to 300. So it's like 10 to 30 pounds per barrel, depending on the style that we're going for, either like pale ale through double IPA. One thing that we do, depending on the variety of hop, so like Citra is such a small, tight cone. It can be sometimes hard to like really get that Citra character out. So we actually use a thing that we have called the hop chopper. And we've gone through a couple iterations of hop choppers, but the thing we finally landed on, and you can go on Amazon, you can buy this thing called the Super Handy, and it's a yard mulcher, like yard, like leaf mulcher for your yard. But we've modified it slightly to chop up our wet hops so we can get more of the lupulin inside the flower exposed to the wort. So we put those in our mash tun if they've been chopped, flood in from the bottom, 20 minute contact with our wort, and a lot of people will knock out of
your rakes while you're doing it.
We don't. Okay. We do Vorloff. I would like to run our rakes, but just because of our equipment, we actually have a beer called Rake Breaker that was a fresh hop, and it's aptly named. Those things, you know, they're full of oil, they're very sticky, and they're heavy. They're super heavy. I mean, you imagine 300 pounds of wet hops with then a bunch of sticky wort added to it. It's a mess. So we do a 20 minute contact time once we're full in, and then we can't knock out of our hop back, so we go back into the kettle. And because we're back in the kettle, I have to whirlpool anyway. I might as well put some more hops in there. So usually that's a little T90 charge just to add to the general, you know, hoppiness of the beer. And then we knock out and, you know, go through normal fermentation, whatever. This year, you know, kind of stuff we learned from Zach over at Single Hill, we had access to a smaller pellet mill. So we've been just running around, hitting cooling room floors, grabbing freshly kilned stuff. You mentioned that earlier, that when you arrived, we were off doing that. And so it was pretty funny. John and I were at this pellet mill with, you know, 60 pounds of fresh kilns from three different farms of the same variety, Citra. So we had, you know, Carpenter Citra, we had Sauve Citra, and we had Loza Citra. So we're like running through, we're labeling those boxes. So we'll be able to go back and, you know, we'll be able to tell you like, yeah, this Carpenter beer that was like, you know, it's 100% Carpenter, even like the freshly kilned stuff, that's their Citra. We don't do 100% that. We actually will add in some like cryo, or just depending on who we're collabing with or what the beer needs. Sometimes it'll be cryo, sometimes just T90. But yeah, this year, all the big batch wet hop stuff has got fresh kiln in it, which is pretty cool.
Nice. Yep. And that's just a normal dry hop process. Now, as you mentioned, you know, these pellets that you're making on these small pelletizers or pelletizers as they are not exactly the same as a standard T90.
No, they're a little bit less dense. But the one that we're using has a really nice feature that its dye is like directly cooled by liquid nitrogen. Mm-hmm. So they're constantly just dumping liquid nitrogen on that thing. So the pellets coming out are like really, really green. There's like no kind of burny, toasty stuff to it at all. And then we have the ability to...
And Zach's pelletizer is the same kind of thing where he's dripping...
Yeah, he's dumping liquid nitrogen on it through a nitrogen stone on top of it. Because we don't have it in-house, we have to store those bags. So we do get them in Mylar, and they are nitrogen flushed, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So...
And you try to use them within...
As soon as possible. Yep. As soon as we can. I have a little bit more confidence in them because the nitrogen packaging over there is really good. And the Mylar they use is really nice. But I definitely want to get them in beer as soon as possible.
As you're tasting fresh hop beers, and dry hopping them, what do you look for, and how do you then rebalance if something's not going the direction that you want? How do you find them tasting? And, you know, if there's something, what are you looking for with it? And What do you want to fix if it's not, you know, hitting the notes that you really want out of it?
It's a little bit flying by instrumentation, because the beers do not, in my opinion, taste phenomenal when they're like still like fermenting and you're having to make dry hop decisions, or, you know,
it's all very green.
It's still super green. And what, from our experience, you know, from the last 5 years of brewing these things is, you know, they start hit there. Like if it tasted terrible or you're even packaging it, you're just like, oh man, I don't know. You know, this thing is rough. But then in like 3 days, it's just like brightens up and everything pops. And so you kind of just have to have a lot of trust in your process and your decision-making skills and, you know, your experience. It's, you know, like any beer really. We tend to dry hop most of our regular beers kind of earlier on in the fermentation process, just to scrub out any O2 that's being introduced during that process. So
it's still during active fermentation.
It's like the tail end. We don't really like hot volcanoes, but yeah, if there's like a few tenths left to go, you know, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, fighting hop creep and all that stuff. So, but yeah, I don't know. That's just, it's sort of like, you kind of like, you rub those hops, you smell those hops and you make your best guess. And we seem to be doing okay. you know, there's definitely been a few, yeah, you know, yeah, we don't talk about them, but there's been a few that are just like, we don't talk about those ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, those hops were not ready yet. there's been that, or,
yeah,
you know, just whatever, this something got spicy for some reason.
Sure.
And, so, you know, you do what you do, but
well, let's zoom back, you know, as we finish up here and talk about the big picture. You know, you've been around here brewing in the Yakima Valley, Sunnyside, et cetera, for a long time now. You guys got Varietal off the ground. What's the long-term vision for Varietal? What do you hope to achieve? You know, what does success look like, and how will you know when you got there? Or have you already hit it?
No, it's we're constantly, you know, talking about what's next. We definitely need to get a canning situation in-house. That's going to be huge for our personal lives and our personal time. Also, you know, the way the direction's going with the market currently, it seems that second location is pretty key. I have a few friends that are, you know, on their second, third locations, and they're all telling me like, dude, you just got to get this going as soon as possible. So that discussion's on the table about where that would go and what that looks like. That's, you know, sort of like up for debate and probably not appropriate to talk about here, but definitely in the Northwest. And, you know, as close to home as possible, but far enough away that we're not eating our customer base. But yeah, that's sort of the thing, you know. We were talking earlier about, you know, this business, this industry, it's so cool because you do get to travel a lot and you get to see the brewers and beers and the things they're creating in their context. And and I love to travel. And, you know, we didn't get to do that for a number of years. So I was trying to catch up on that and getting ready to go to Mexico soon for judging competition. Pretty excited for that.
What competition?
The Copa Baja in Mexicali.
Oh, you're going to be judging that one. Mm-hmm. So am I.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Let's hang out.
I guess we will. Cool. No, I got the plane information yesterday.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm waiting for Alfredo to get back to me on that.
There's a few others that are going down to judge that one, too.
It's going
to
be some fun crowd.
Somehow it didn't click with me that you're going to be there, but that's really funny.
I don't know if he's announced that he's like been announcing, you know, so-and-so is confirmed, so-and-so is confirmed. Sure. And he hasn't put me on that confirmado list yet. But I'm definitely going. But, you know, the travel aspect, it's like so cool to be able to like go someplace new, not know anybody, but have a thing that's in common with someone that you just have this common language. Even if you don't speak the language, you have the common language of fermentation, hops and malt, you know, and yeast. That's the next 5 to 7 years, I would say, is the you know, not the long, long term, but
spreading the Varietal hop gospel.
Just getting out and checking out what's going on. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good place to bring this to a close. G&D Chillers has set the standard on quality, service, and reliability with 24/7 service and support. Amira from BSG is a great way to capture classic German lager flavor. Try Old Orchard's flavored craft juice concentrate blends in your next craft beverage. AccuBrew helps you detect problems before they ruin a batch. ProBrew has rotary can fillers in stock with a 2 to 4 week lead time. RMS roller grinder mills unlock the full potential of your grain. Omega stylized yeasts bring intense guava and passion fruit aromas out of your malt and hops. Go green with multi-pack handles from Roberts PolyPro. And ABS Commercial is your full service brewery outfitter. If you've enjoyed this episode, help support what we do. Go to beerandbrewing.com, click on that subscribe button. Whether you're an industry pro and want a subscription to both craft beer and brewing and our brewing industry guide, or whether you are a brewer that is just interested in craft beer and brewing, we've got fantastic stuff for you. And I mean, rather than a Patreon, just subscribe to the magazines and we'll send you great content, recipes, stories that are valuable to your business, all of that. Thanks to our friends at Yakima Valley Hops for loaning us their podcast studio here in Yakima to record this in.
It's pretty sweet.
It's a great room. Yeah. It's very quiet. It's been fantastic. You know, one of the best environments in terms of sound that I have recorded with on the road. Appreciate that. Chris, if people want to learn more about Varietal, where do they find more about you both in real life and out in the digital world?
Well, you can find us in live and in person down at Sunnyside, Washington, Tuesday through Sunday. Varietalbeer.com is our website. And of course, you know, Instagram and Facebooks and all of the socials.
All of those things. Yeah. Well, it's been fun talking to you about brewing hobby beers. Great drinking your beers with you.
And yeah, thanks for
getting to connect again.
Inviting me. I really appreciate it. It's really cool.
We'll see you in Mexico.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine for those who love to make and drink great beer. To learn more or to subscribe, visit beerandbrewing.com or find us on social media at Craft Beer Brew.